Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
All right, welcome to Patriots Playbook. I'm the guest host, Mike Parenti, with my co-pilot,
part two.
Eric Scalabino, and this is an extension of PFW in progress because it's the same two damn hosts you just heard for the last 2 hours. So get used to it.
Can't get enough of us.
We don't go away. I have no idea what the hell we're going to talk about for an hour because we just rehashed every
Chick-fil-A.
Dead, tired topic. Chick-fil-A, or a Chick-filler, as Fred calls it.
We have our friend from ESPN coming up soon, don't we?
He's on three.
No, we're not doing anything. It's us for an hour.
Oh.
Can we kill the music? Thank you.
Wow. Abruptly.
I made a request, and no, there we go. It's back again. It's a long song, you know? It's like a continuous loop.
It's NFL
Films. Well, usually
films.
It's John Rook postulating for about 2 minutes, so I know.
Well, I know he talks over the song and then some, but I don't really have that much to say. But I am excited about Thursday night. I'm not going to lie. Not just because Peter Manfredo is fighting for a world title.
Which he is at the Dunk.
Which he is at the Dunk.
Downtown Providence.
Downtown Providence.
Got a couple of Rhode Island guys here.
Tickets
like
still
boxing.
Available. Yeah, only two people in the world, according to Andy Hart.
I'm three.
A big,
I like boxing.
Fat-headed, ignorant idiot anyway.
Well, that's true.
I'm glad you're on our side. Yeah.
If he wins, do you want me to get him for the next game to do the coin toss or the honorary captain or something?
Yes. Because he would be the first Rhode Island world champion since Vinny Paz.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
It's a pretty big deal.
I'm a big deal. I don't know if you've heard.
How long ago was Vinny Paz?
Oh, God.
I was in the 90s.
Yeah, that was
early
a while
90s,
ago.
Mid-90s.
How many world champions are there from New Hampshire?
Who cares about New Hampshire?
Yeah, but we're from Rhode Island.
Made it seem like Rhode Island's a long time between
it's a small state.
World champions.
It's a small state.
Providence used to be a pretty good mecca of boxing. Rocky Marciano fought in that city a number of times. Some good heavyweights and good fighters to come out of Providence. You should do your history and your research before you speak ignorantly.
Do your history before you
speak
ignorantly.
I'm just joshing you a bit. I'm sorry.
He's a little on edge.
I'm a little on edge today. I'm in the Fred Kirsch. There's a lot of pressure.
You know?
I don't want to completely bomb like Eric did yesterday.
We didn't completely bomb. That's inaccurate.
You screwed the pooch yesterday.
I did no such thing.
Maybe not yesterday, but you screwed the pooch before.
Why don't you, that's not right.
You were steering the ship on that hole.
And you steered it into a Titanic-sized iceberg.
Did the best I could with the talent around me, and I use that term loosely.
Ladies and gentlemen, Wade Phillips.
And you'll notice that the show picked up considerably in the second hour. In terms of anger, intensity, tone.
Yeah, anger. Definitely.
Yeah, well, people
anger.
Want anger. People like anger. People respond
well, people
to me, and they don't like me, and so it's great. So it works out well. This way, I kind of generate some talking points, some launching pads, if you will.
You're descending into your broadcast voice there. You notice that?
What am I doing?
Descending into your broadcast
Spit
voice.
Spit it out.
Launching pads.
Today. Sometime today. So what do you think Thursday night? I know you think Brett Favre is going to throw 8 picks and he's going to break his ankle and throw a pass between his legs and all this stuff that you
at this
media
point,
types have pigeonholed him as.
At this point in his career, I expect that out of him more than I expect him to have a solid game.
Oh, like the 6-touchdown game he had this year?
Yes, that was. I mean, come on. That was a fluke, and you know that.
Well, yeah, a 6-touchdown game is a fluke, but him playing well is not a fluke. He had a pretty good year last year. I don't know if you noticed that.
He had an okay year last year, which... In the context,
an okay year?
In the context of the 3 or 4 years prior to that, was a miracle because he was
that,
playing
and not
awful
only make
before
it better,
that.
So you can't by comparison, it's better than okay.
I was noticing a trend with him, and in the last 5 or so years, he has his skills have diminished.
Oh, no question, his skills have diminished,
and
I mean,
he's more erratic and
72 years old.
And
I mean, you got to give him some credit for coming back last year and taking the team to the NFC title game. Now, granted, he gave the NFC championship away in overtime.
The biggest games he had last year, he played horribly.
And you are 100% correct.
And this is a big game.
I won't even deny that. And this is a big one.
So I don't expect him
to have a great game. This is a different team. And he does not have the same personnel around him. And I think they've made more of a commitment to run the football than Green Bay certainly did last year. As good as Ryan Grant was, Thomas Jones has been a workhorse these last few weeks. Had a big, big game against Seattle. No, St. Louis. I'm sorry, on Sunday.
Oh yeah.
And I think they've discovered
every big game against St. Louis.
I know it's true. That and well, this team could barely beat him by a touchdown. So we can't take anything from that Jet victory. They beat him by 44 points.
They sure did.
So you got to give him some
credit.
That was
the biggest win margin in Jets history, if I heard.
Which
right.
really surprises me. I know that always that stat always surprises me because I always think that every team's beating somebody by 55 at some point. Mm. But you see like 30-10. Oh, it's the biggest margin of victory. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me?
Well.
But, you know, I think they've made more of a commitment to running the football and try to cut down on Favre's mistakes. And when he's in a position where it's ball control offense and they've got the lead, he's not going to do as many stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your theory of the over or under on two picks, you said he's going to go over.
I think he'll have about three picks.
But I think it'll be deceiving because if he does, it'll be because it's the fourth quarter, 2 minutes to go, and he's chucking the ball because they're down by 21.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that those will happen in the second, third quarter.
So you think
quarter.
It's like over the course
of the
game?
Yeah, over
the
course
of
the game in normal spots, yeah.
Well, we'll see what kind of pass rush plan they have for him. Now, I don't know. Can you really send the dogs after Brett Favre? I mean, he's seen everything that they could possibly throw at him. I think the strategy the last couple of weeks, Eric, is more beneficial. Let your front three do all the work up front, which is why they're the front three.
Well, and
right?
that's why they're all first-round picks.
That's what they're getting paid to do, okay? And it's not just setting the tone of the line of scrimmage, but stopping the run. We've seen Ty Warren has had two big games in a row now, I think. He's making a lot of plays. Seven tackles, I think, on Sunday against Buffalo, and he had a sack as well.
Yep. And Seymour had another sack.
Seymour had another sack. So you're starting to see those guys make plays, and they're keeping everything in front of them. And now you just drop everybody else back. So drop eight men back there. Mm-hmm. You have your two line. Let's say you have your two linebackers, three linebackers if you're playing nickel, five, six D-backs playing deep. Take away everything deep and keep everything in front of you. That's the way I think you have to beat Favre, too.
And we've been seeing a lot more lately of Mayo dropping back into pass coverage. Although he did get very close to sacking Trent Edwards in that game this past Sunday. So it was good to see him get a little bit of a pass rush going. But he's been playing a little bit more back.
Yes.
Lately. And I think that plays into what you were just saying, Mike, about send the three. That's their job. Maybe bring everybody back a little bit. And then in spots, pick your spots when you want to hit Favre or whoever the quarterback is, whoever they're playing that week with the blitz. And I think that's worked out for them. And you know, as we've seen, Mayo has done, I think he's acquitted himself pretty well in pass coverage.
You know, the obvious spots to send the dogs would be 3rd and 13, 3rd and 14. And the only way you can do that or even set that up is to make plays on 1st and 2nd down, which is where the front three comes in.
Mm-hmm.
They hand off to Jones on 1st and 10. You stop him for a loss of three. Now you're in business. Now you have an opportunity at some point in that series to go after Favre and maybe force him into a mistake. But if it's 2nd and 5, if it's 3rd and 2, you're not going to be able to pick them 10 times like you think is going to happen. You said 10.
No,
didn't you?
No, I did not say 10.
You said 10.
I said 3.
Gary Mark tape.
Three.
You said 10 picks.
I said 3. By the way, breaking news, Joe Madden named AL Manager of the Year. No surprise there.
Joey Glasses.
Yeah. AL Manager of the Year.
I think Joe Madden's a little
Mark
bit
tape.
Racist toward Italians because I didn't think Baldelli played enough in the postseason. Every time Baldelli played, he produced. Game-tying home run in that clinching game.
Mm-hmm.
Every time Baldelli benched, they put in Gabe Gross, and Gabe Gross, who sucked at everything.
Lived up to his name.
He was gross. Couldn't run, couldn't catch, couldn't field, couldn't hit.
Kept the Rhode Island guy down.
No, I don't like that. Let the Paisan play.
That's right.
Hopefully he learns his lesson. But he said, you know, that's a deserving award for him.
Yeah.
God bless him. They did a great job this year.
Sure did.
They beat the Red Sox. I can't complain.
Who do you think is
going
to get NL Manager of the Year? Or did that?
I think it's already Lou Piniella, isn't it?
Is it? Was it Lou Piniella?
Another gag job for the White Sox.
I was hoping it would have been Joey Four Rings just to get
upset. Sorry, you know, winning 81 games and taking a team to the playoffs and again wiped out. Yeah, I'm sorry. It doesn't constitute Manager of the Year.
There's that anger we talked about at the top of the show.
It's just, I'm just glad a different fan base got to see what we've lived the last 8 years among Yankee fans. The mismanagement of the bullpen and all the crap that he does in games that makes you scratch your head, okay? Because they could have beat the Phillies.
How long had it been since the Dodgers were in the playoffs?
Probably 95?
Oh.
90s. So, they were in there in the
90s. So Torrey got there and they went to the playoffs. Yeah, I see what...
Yeah, and they weren't going anywhere until...
They've been missing.
Until they... What they were missing was the greatest friggin' RBI man of our generation in Manny Ramirez. A team was floundering before they traded for Ramirez.
Wow. That's Manny being Manny, you know?
That's all it is, Manny.
Thanks for listening to MLBtalk.com.
Hey, we cover all topics.
I'm sorry,
on
we cover
show.
Everything. You want to talk too. Some? Want to talk some NBA?
Yeah, a little the NBA, Knickerbockers, a little boxing.
The New York Knickerbockers.
The Knickerbockers are
tough loss last night in San Antonio, by the way.
Another disgrace.
Yeah, Ginobili didn't play. Tony Parker, Mrs. Yeah. Longoria this there.
Yeah.
He didn't play, and they still lost to the Spurs. The Spurs hadn't won a home all year. So you know what? Same old crap from the Knicks. They still they're I can't say what they used to say in Major League.
No.
Yeah, the Asian guys there.
Right.
But no, they're still lousy. That'd be the clean version. Mm-hmm. They're still lousy.
Well,
we have a football game on Thursday, you know. I don't know if you noticed that.
Pretty good one, too.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. I think we've already rehashed that several hundred
first
times.
Play, I mean, first place.
Biggest game of the year. Hey, these next three, I shouldn't say next three. Go back to the last one, and then this one and the next one, the three biggest games of the year in a row.
AFC East opponents. I play them all back to back to back, and first place is on the line. It was on the line last week. They did their job. It's going to be on the line this week. I think they're going to do the job. Next week in Miami is going to be a very telling one because they got their butts handed to them by Miami the first time
around. That's true.
Now they're going down there, but I don't expect them to get fooled by that Wildcat thing again a second time because other teams have tried it on them in spots since then, and they've been able to snuff it out. And obviously Miami's the team that runs it the best. They're the first ones to introduce it. But I don't think they're going to get fooled by it again.
They're still doing it, and it's still working to some degree. Now, they had a couple of weeks where it was quiet, and then last week we talked about it a little bit on the last show, but they had the Wildcat, the Ronnie Brown handoff to Ricky Williams, mm-hmm. and then they had the flea flicker. Who threw the pass on the flea flicker?
Pennington.
Okay. Of course he did. Well, I'm sorry. I'm in the Fred chair. I'm a little bit zoning out.
That's
so, of course, what did they hand off to?
It was either Williams but they tossed it back to Pennington, and he hit it. I mean,
I would like to see the Statue of Liberty play. I want to see something really exotic.
All these college
Toronto's
plays.
Really got to bring it back.
The
like
fumble Ruski.
The fumble Ruski.
I don't even know if that's legal anymore.
I'm sure there'd be 25 flags thrown on that play. But I think, yeah, other teams have copied it, which really, if any season would tell you that this is a copycat league, it'd be this season. With how many teams would try to run this Wildcat stuff?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost insulting. The Giants haven't tried it yet, thank God, because they don't need to resort to gimmicks to pound people's faces in. But I think the teams that aren't as good are trying to do something to compensate. Like, we got to try something.
Why not? I mean, it worked so well for Miami, and if you have the personnel that you think can do it, why not have another element that teams have to prepare for?
I guess, but it's not everybody's doing it.
They're not doing it properly. Though. No, you're right.
That's the problem.
You need two backs.
And the Patriots didn't do it properly in Indy. Am I right?
No, I want to ask Bill about that next week, actually, when it's
a Why was the lone guy back there the guy receiving the snap? It made the play pretty obvious.
It makes it a two-option play instead of a three-option play because Falk was either going to throw the ball or he was going to run with it himself, and most of the time he just ran with it himself. You put another back behind there. Now you think, all right, could he fake it to, you know, could he hand it off? Could he fake the handoff? Is he going to throw it? Is he going to run with it himself? Yeah, you definitely need the personnel to do it. And, you know, if Morris is back, or even if you put BJGE, as he's calling himself now. He autographs BJGE.
Oh, my goodness.
Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, because it's a lot of letters to spell. And he's just shortened it up, four letters.
Whatever works. He's been a nice complimentary back. But like you said, they have to have somebody back there to make the Wildcat work to mm-hmm. sort of be a decoy. Otherwise, the play is just going to get blown up, which it did against the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a critical play that cost them. I mean, other plays cost them the game. But
They
try to reach into the bag of tricks a little bit and pull out a rabbit out of a hat. And it didn't work out so well. But yeah, I guess you're right. I guess it's worthwhile to give it a shot.
It reminds me of why I used to say this years ago was I didn't understand why on goal line situations pro teams didn't have a small package of plays that were options. You know, like run the option.
Right.
Put your two backs in there, have the quarterback take the pitch. You know, not every quarterback's a good running quarterback.
That's
but,
the thing, too.
But if you have that personnel, like the Jets, for instance, have a Brad Smith.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You get in a goal line situation, a goal-to-go situation, why not take out your normal quarterback, put Brad Smith in there, have a couple of running backs, and now you've got an option. And, you know, not to have pro offenses go back to the option, because I hated the option as a base offense. But when you're in a short-yarded situation, why not?
Yeah, I guess my thing is that when you see that formation, it's kind of predictable, isn't it? Like, you know it's coming.
Well, teams can throw out of that, too, you know?
I guess. It's just, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being naive, but when I see Ronnie Brown line up behind center, I'm like, here comes the Wildcat. And it works every time. And I think the thing with the option, like you said, there aren't a lot of good running quarterbacks in this league. Plus, the quarterback gets the snot beat out of him on the option play.
More times than not, he's
going to pitch at the last minute, and he's going to get creamed. And I think it's just a risk. They're so protective of quarterbacks in this league that do you really want your guy taking 5 or 10 more hits per game than he's already going to take?
Well, that's why I'm
dropping
saying,
back
that's
in
why
a three-step drop.
You take your normal quarterback out of there and put a wide receiver who used to play quarterback or a running back who can run the play or a backup quarterback who has some experience doing that. It's somebody on the team has had experience running an option, whether it was in college or in high school. You got to have somebody on your team who is capable of doing that.
Every team
has one.
Yeah, you're right.
So I'm just saying it's just a package of plays, not an entire offense.
I mean,
just,
Falk could do it here, obviously.
Sure.
Who else?
Sammy Morris actually told me he was a quarterback in high school. So I don't know if he was an option quarterback.
It's funny because a lot of guys were quarterbacks in high school when you think about it. A lot of
wide receivers.
Good athletes, but weren't going to be pro level quarterbacks, so they just used their speed for other positions.
Drew Bennett of Tennessee,
right, yeah.
Or was he with St. Louis now? I forget who he was.
St.
But
Louis now.
He was a quarterback at UCLA.
I just feel like, excuse me as I yawn into the mic. I
Are
feel
we
like
keeping you up here, Mike.
I could, yeah. Oh no, you don't do that for me. Sorry.
Oh, we're keeping you awake. I should say.
Gary's not paying attention.
This isn't PFW in progress. This is a serious show.
Yeah. Okay. I just feel like the option play and all that stuff is like the once in a blue moon thing, and I know Miami has proved otherwise. But I want to catch, when I run it, I want the team to have no idea it's coming. Not somewhere thinking, they got to run it at some point, we'll be ready for it. I want them to completely not know. And that's what made the Week 3 victory for the Dolphins so, I guess if you're a Miami fan, satisfying. Because, man, they had no clue what the hell was going on. They were not even, I'm willing to bet they weren't expecting that at all. I really do.
I don't think they were expecting
but
it.
But now they are.
Right.
And now so is everybody else that plays Miami. And to some degree, the whole league playing anybody is thinking, okay, this team may try to copy that too. So, you know, it just sort of devalues it a bit to me.
But
I guess
working
nothing
for
you
them,
can do. I guess if it's working
for,
you got to keep doing
like
it.
Like you said, Ricky Williams scored that 50-yard touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, Miami's proven the theory wrong that you can't do it 8,000 times a year and have it work because
unless they're doing it,
it's working.
Unless they're doing it where at the very last second, they're getting into that formation where Pennington runs out to the sideline and they don't have the personnel on defense to combat it. Maybe they're doing it, since they've played New England.
It's a good check down audible kind of play.
It certainly is.
Get to the line, and like you said, see the coverage. Okay, they can't defend us if we do this.
Right.
And then switch off.
And then make the audible, run out, have Pennington run out to the side. I mean, it's an easy audible to make on offense. It's not as easy.
Theoretically, it is.
It's not as easy to defend when you're on defense.
Yeah, you're right. It's harder to get out of whatever defensive set you're in and try to adjust because somebody is definitely going to be in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
You have some meathead back there who doesn't know where he's supposed to be. And
somebody has to cover Pennington.
Right, exactly.
Because if you leave him alone, you're going to throw the ball to him, obviously. Even if he only gains 10, 15 yards, that's probably going to be good enough for the first down.
Yeah, I wonder if like
every time, unless you're, you know, third and 20 or something.
Yeah, I wonder if you can guess what the team is going to do based on their overall philosophy. Like, in other words, you see Matt Castle line up wide, and you think there's no way they're throwing him the ball here. So we can narrow down one thing they're not going to do in this crazy formation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. They can't afford another injury at quarterback, right? So if you're an opponent, you're probably thinking, you know what? I'll put a body on Castle, but, you know, my corner will cut back in when he runs because they're not going to throw him the ball. I just wonder if teams get that in depth with it or they just try to defend everything when they do see it lined up. What are the chances you think of them ever throwing it to Castle in that spot? He's a good athlete. I guess
it
could happen.
If you run it enough times and don't throw it to Castle,
right,
you increase the likelihood that
that's
one of these
true
times you're
yeah
going to throw it to Castle yeah because teams are going to get into a lulled into a sense of security.
Oh, here comes the Wildcat. All right, Falk's going to take the pitch.
Right.
Or, yeah.
And you got your corner looking into the backfield instead of focusing on the quarterback who's lined up at wide receiver, and all of a sudden, look, perfect example. In 2001, when Miami came to New England and played the Patriots, Brady was starting, and he did the little fake snap, and it went to Falk, and he went over to his right side. Brady did a little curl, went out to the far side, and Falk turned around and threw it across the field. Brady caught it for like a 20-yard gain downfield.
That's
nobody
right
saw it coming.
Some crazy stuff. It's like some old-school URI offense. I got some good URI football stories for you.
Do you?
Yeah, it used
you
to
like,
be...
You like Darren Rizzi, the new coach there?
They haven't recruited defense in about 10 years at URI. It's phenomenal. But we used to be, when I was there, it was coached by Floyd Keith. Floyd Keith, by the way,
yep,
you may recognize the name.
Steeler? Right? Was he the Steeler?
No.
Was that,
No. Floyd Keith is the head of the Black Coaches Association.
Okay.
So you only see him on TV when there's some controversy involving black coaches. Uh-huh. And then he speaks on ESPN and they have a little vignette or whatever.
Yeah.
But he was the URI coach. And, man, we used to get on him because they were bad. And they always made some just weird-ass calls. And I questioned him after a game once. This is me working for the student newspaper, you know, the good 5 cents
cigar.
I'm some lowly a-hole, you know, punk reporter. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, they had like a third. It was the funniest thing. They went for this fourth down play almost near midfield before the end of the half. It was like fourth and 15. We're going to try to get it and keep the chains moving and run off the clock. They ran like a draw play. It got blown up.
Mm-hmm.
Other team takes over, completes two passes, kicks a field goal before the end of the half. Just a totally awful sequence. So they asked after the game if he had considered calling another play. And he's like, no, that's the one I called. We just didn't run it. And he got really pissy with me.
Uh-huh.
And then afterward, after the press conference, asked me like what play I would have called. He like pointed at Mike. He's like, what play would you have called? I mean, you got to be kidding me.
Well, did you give him a play?
I would have thrown the ball.
What did he say?
And he's like, well, as you saw, we were in the red zone earlier in the game, and we threw, and it got picked off. I'm like, well, that's because your quarterback couldn't throw.
Well, and that's also in the red zone.
And that's in the red zone. It was just, Eric, he was at the point where he knew he was on the way out, so he was just pretty much shooting back at everybody at that point. But, my, you know, I have a buddy of mine who played football there,
mm-hmm.
Damon Ray.
Okay.
You can Google him. I don't know if he has any Google. So he was a good wide receiver at URI. We used to always be on the radio asking him to throw the ball at Damon Ray. We used to get so pissed off because they wouldn't throw him the ball. As it turns out, he's one of my good friend's fiance right now.
Oh, yeah?
So I saw him about a week ago, and we were talking about that game. So I mentioned the story. He goes, what play did he call? A draw? I'm like, yes, he called a draw. He goes, that's all we did. We ran draws.
Wow.
A lot of frustration
Who was the coach that had the Pittsburgh Steelers ties? Was that
Stowers?
Tim Stowers, right?
Yeah. The old Hayseed Tim Stowers, he was like the Grady Little of URI football. Every press conference, they'd win the game. Well, I don't know, 28's better than 27, so I guess we won the game. Great, you know, it's...
Moral victories? He was into moral victories?
No, he was just into winning by a point, and that's all he knew, is that they had more points on the scoreboard at the end. He didn't know how they got there. He could just read the scoreboard and tell you they won. I'll tell you, they should just cut that program. Funnel all the money back into basketball, which is the only big draw there at URI, and let's bring back the glory days of Lamar Odom and Jim Harrick, and when cheated.
The glory day.
Glory
of
day.
Lamar Odom. No, he was only there for half a season.
And literally there for half a semester.
Right. Wow.
Because I know.
Was it that much?
Oh, yeah. I had classes with Lamar Odom. I had a theater 101 class, and they called his name like every day. Lamar! Lamar! And then like nothing on the attendance sheet.
Wow.
So you knew he wasn't going to class.
Wasn't there for class anyway.
Gary's staring at me to shut the hell up about URI football. I don't think he really cares anymore. You don't really care.
Train's off the tracks.
Yeah, you gave up. This is a runaway Amtrak Christmas holiday disaster. You know, the thing spills over the side of the railing. Wow.
And the toys all over the place.
Toys, yeah. I was thinking of, like, strewn bodies, but, you know, toys works too, I guess.
Oh, it's Christmas, you saw. I was thinking maybe it was delivered.
And any good NFL Polar news Express. we haven't talked about because, you know, John Rook always brings up power rankings.
Yeah, wasn't there a new power ranking that somebody mentioned on the last show?
Well, Solomon Wilcots is a... Wilcots?
Wilcots.
Wilcots, not Wilcox.
No.
He's a friend of the program now because the Patriots are fifth in his power ranking. And I got to say, they do belong somewhere near the top,
I think.
Guess
he has Tennessee number one.
How do I find this now? NFL.com?
I don't know.
Right?
Just type in his name and... Well, didn't Vic Carucci do the power rankings for NFL.com?
I'm all screwed up now. I bet he did this on TV. I'm never going to find it.
Just Google
I'm
it.
I'm wasting time. Find it. I don't like Google. That little Google news tip you gave me sucks, by the way.
No, it doesn't suck.
All you get is like loser fan blogs.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, you do.
I'll show you how to use it.
All right, now you got to show me how to use Google.
How to use
Mr.
that?
Mr. Pompous.
Oh, Floyd Keith was just on.
No kidding.
No, I swear to God, he was just on being quoted.
See? It's clairvoyance. We have two Floyd Keith references in the same show. This is the best edition of Patriot Playbook possibly ever.
I didn't catch why he was on, but he was just on. And
there has to be a black coach controversy or something, or a hiring or something where they kind of get his take on everything.
Maybe.
Good for him.
Yeah. Well, if it comes up, they've been showing the same thing for the last half hour, so when it comes up again, I'll point it out to you.
Yeah, you know what? I've given up trying to find the power rankings, but I did want to talk some more about this game. And what we think could possibly happen. There's a Spanish woman with bananas around her neck.
Well, around her neck, but they're hanging somewhere a little bit lower.
It's a good place for a pearl necklace.
Oh.
What? No, she has a... I'm talking about her choice of jewelry.
I don't believe her name is Pearl Nicholas, no.
You know, they had the did you see the Spanish Family Feud they had on?
Yes.
There
was a guy named Andy on
Andy
there.
Andy. I hate the Family Feud in general. Just because
I would think you would like Family Feud because you're all about feuding.
This feuding, but they're so fraudulent on there. Like the question will be like, you know, name something you buy with your first, you know, paycheck. And the answer will be, here we go, black coaches and administrators.
That's probably why he was on.
They'll ask a question like, name something you buy with your first paycheck, and somebody will say a bookshelf. Good answer! Good answer! that's a crappy answer. Don't give me good answer.
That's a dumbass question.
That's a dumbass answer. And they'll be like, there's a big red X, and everybody, oh, it's too bad.
I have to agree, this might be the best Patriots playbook of
all. Oh, good try. Name a famous celebrity who starts with Jim. They'll be like, Jim Druckenmiller. Oh, go ahead!
Yeah!
Oh, it's
You're right. Then they get all disappointed when the X comes
on. And they answer things twice. Like, they give the same answer twice.
They'll say it twice?
No, they'll just give something that's like, clearly that's going to be included in the answer that was already given. So don't try to say it again. You know, like,
like what? What do you mean? I don't know.
Oh, this is tough. I don't know. I don't know, like somebody will say, name a place you take a guy before he gets married, a strip club. Then someone will say, a gentleman's club. Oh, yeah, a gentleman's club.
Oh, I see what you mean.
No, that, you already said that.
Yeah, yeah. They're finding a different term for the same thing. Well.
And the only way people, no one ever clears the board, by the way. All the points come from stealing the board. Every single time. 95% of the time, you have to steal it from the other team because nobody can ever, they'll have like the most obscure question and they'll have six answers. No one's going to get it. They're not going to get all six. Because every family has idiots, and you always bring an idiot on the show.
That's the whole point of those shows.
Your jailbird cousin or your drunk aunt who's just going to botch the whole operation.
Why would they do that? Why would you knowingly bring an idiot on your show?
Because maybe you don't have enough smart people
in the
family.
There's so many PFW in progress jokes I could say right now.
That's true. Do we have any emails? Because people probably tuned out about 20 minutes ago. I wonder if anybody's called the big show yet to bust Paul's
That's true.
Chops
Paul
yet.
Left us flat in the middle of PFW in progress gig. Mr. Big Shot.
They don't take calls in the first segment, so not yet.
It's just funny, I'm glad. Thankfully, Paul's not a hypocrite, and he doesn't criticize athletes who go after the money, because that's all Paul's doing here. He could stay with us.
Mm-hmm. He could if he wants.
But there's a nice fat paycheck waiting at the intercom. Are they still with intercom?
A fat paycheck?
Yeah, not so fat.
You mean a paycheck for the fat
who, Paul or the check?
the check.
All right. Well, my point is he ditched us for more money. He found it's like when you get dumped for like, you know, somebody who's
richer,
jacked or, you know, has a nice car and you're like, "Oh, well, I guess
you want to know why it's definitely for the money?"
Why?
Mark Teixeira and CeCe Sabathia that are going to skew everything. I question it.
If you got to go hang out with Butch Stearns, it's
a Oh, money. Christ. And he's talking baseball.
Yeah.
So you're Paul's talking URI.
I thought you said effing URI. He said
you're talking URI.
Talking URI. Oh, man. You're right. We talked URI and Family Feud in the last. We just went over the game for 2 hours.
In that regard, I agree with Glenn. I don't think Sabathia.
Oh, boy, is this live?
They won't be in on Sabathia. But from a reason will be baseball, I think. And I think that.
You got to call and bust his chops, though.
He's much more calm and mellow on the big show, by the way.
Unless you call
he
him.
He enunciates. Yeah. He speaks clearly.
Because it's real radio.
It's real radio. Because, you know, real fans might be listening.
And he gets a paycheck for it.
And he gets paid. See, when you can half-ass it here and stutter and stumble and spit all over the mic like we do because, you know, we don't get paid any extra for this.
Yeah. It's part of our day job, as Fred calls it.
Part of my day job would be doing an update today at some point, which I don't think's ever going to get done.
You'll get it done.
And what's there to update today?
There's nothing to update.
No, it's Matt Cassel talking about how great he is.
Don't worry about it.
I love
the game,
some of
you're
me.
Fine. You don't worry about it.
Well, I got to write an update.
Yeah, but you got a transcript. By the time we get back, there'll be transcripts. You'll be fine.
Tara does a good job with the transcripts, by the way.
She sure does.
Yeah.
Good. Hi, I'm Tara.
I was waiting for that. Thank you. Okay.
She does. You do a good job.
Day. All right. Bill Belichick on the TV.
Hi, I'm Tara. Pizza with a smile, Bertrand.
I like the part where she slams Paul at the end. That's good.
Now it's time for this week's Q-Dova question of the week.
She can barely, you can tell she's keeping from laughing.
Because this is such
thing.
A damn joke. That's why I'm really reading this. What the hell has my career come to?
Has it really come to this?
You know, what do you think of
Cassel wearing the hat inside?
Oh, yeah.
The winter hat.
You ever try to work out one of those hats?
No.
I tried going to the gym once with like the wool skull cap.
It's too hot.
Sweating my balls off like 20 minutes. I couldn't even get through one set. I was hyperventilating. I was pulling on my, tugging on my shirt. Muscles just ripping out of my shirt.
Oh, brother.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is
You're
ridiculous.
Right.
That's right.
It's so ridiculous.
Oh, hey, we have an email. Thank God.
Oh, okay. You could read some other ones, too, that Fred didn't get to. I'm sure he didn't read every email today.
Darren from Wales, part of our Wales contingent. By the way,
huge in
I want to know if Darren, if you get a chance to email us back, if you watch the Joe Calzaghe, Roy Jones Jr. fight, the fighting pride of Wales just put a hurting on the former four-time world champion, Roy Jones. I thought a lot of people would be proud in Wales today.
A Welsh boxer, huh?
Undefeated, and it looks like, well, supposedly was going to be his last fight and wanted to go out on top, but I think he's going to still fight. So, but anyway, Darren asks us, can you tell me who New England's free agents are next season? No clue.
Well,
I'd have to look
Matt,
that up.
Matt Castle will be one of them.
Would be the noteworthy one, and I think he's 0-for-1 right there because I think he's on
he's
a go, obviously.
Right.
We got to look this up. I'm going to try to Google this while we actually try to talk about Matt Castle
I think,
a little bit.
I think...
Because they, I mean,
is Will Fork's contract going to be?
I think he's at one more year. So they re-signed. That whole O line is pretty much under contract. 10 years. Sorry, just not
yeah.
Make
they're
up.
Through. I think the O line is through 09.
I mean,
09
even guys
or 10.
Like Hochstein to some degree are locked up.
Right.
And I use locked up loosely, but in the D line they did re-sign Seymour and obviously Brady and
Warren got
and
some,
Warren.
Warren got
Warren
some
got
bucks.
Some scratch.
I think Will Fork is. He might have another
He's
year
coming
left,
up soon because he talked about it earlier this year.
Yeah.
This is the 2007 free agent list. You
yeah.
Know, this is not going to get it done. Okay. How about we try? See, you're right. You do have to teach me how to use Google because I suck. I suck at life. Wait, what I want? Yeah, 2009 free agents. Here we go.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, this is from footballsfuture.com. This could be some hack website by some geek who sits in his basement for 20 hours a day. In his jockey shorts, eating almonds out of a can.
Those
so,
are the kind of people that email the show, though.
It's a valid point.
Like from Nova Scotia.
Can I even look by team? Are you kidding me right now? Hold on.
Hold on. Mike is experimenting with Google here.
Don't tune out yet.
Experimenting Googling himself.
Yeah, he does it by position. This sucks. This website sucks.
Well, just take a quick glance down.
Why? That's what I'm doing. Brandon Jacobs is a free agent.
Nah.
Heath Evans. Unrestricted.
Okay.
No. I don't know. I mean, can you find a better fullback somewhere? Probably. I mean, I don't know. Seems to have a little niche here, right?
Fullbacks
I think he's
a good. Fullbacks seem to be a dime a dozen.
You could bring him back though. I mean, he's not expensive. It's not
going
to cost
you know what?
A
lot. I think he knows he's got a good thing here. If he has offers to go elsewhere, I'd be very surprised. But
he's got a great thing here. He's the only guy who can come here and talk more than he plays.
Yeah.
No, we love Heath Evans. He's
no,
he's
certainly
a great guy.
Do. And he does his job when he's out there.
He does. Jabbar Gaffney, I think. See you later.
Well, maybe.
I just don't think, I talked about this at the beginning of the year. I made this a point that I just think the more he plays, the more his flaws are noticeable.
I do think, though, that wide receiver could be an area where they target free agent.
Well, here we go. You want to take a look at who else is out there? I mean, Desmond Clark is unrestricted. TJ Houshmandzadeh.
Hoosh. Championship.
Championship? Not for me, because I have him, and he hasn't done anything this year. Bobby Ingram. Ingram?
No, I don't
Ingram?
Like him. He
Sorry,
can't
Ingram.
Catch.
No.
Can't catch.
Lee Evans. Interesting. Let's see. How old's Evans, though?
Pretty young.
He's
still.
Young.
He's pretty young. He's in his 20s still, I think.
And they have Roy Williams. He's in Dallas now, for Christ's sake. I don't even know if have they re-signed. Have they did a trade and sign?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what they did.
Corin Robinson, there you go. There's
oh,
a winner.
Trouble,
Devery Henderson is an interesting name.
That's a very interesting name.
Because he kind of reminds me of a Dante Stallworth type who could be a number three. Because I thought Stallworth, I maintain he was the most underrated player in this team last year. I really believe that. I mean, the guy caught 600 yards, overshadowed by Welker setting a team record in catches and Moss setting an NFL record in touchdowns. But the guy was a good decoy.
And not only.
And you miss him now. You couldn't bring him back for that money. I totally understand that.
And not only did he catch 600 yards worth of passes, I think. If I had to guess, I'd say probably 450 of those yards came after the catch.
He was very good after the catch. And Gaffney, I mean, first, Gaffney doesn't catch the ball, number one. So what he does after, we don't even know. But you're right. I mean, that's tough to replace. I always thought he was going to be hard to replace. But they had no choice. He was going to ask for that big money, and he got it from Cleveland. There's no way you can pay that many receivers.
Well, they had the option with him. the way they had the contract, they had the option to pick it back up. They could have, if they wanted to, they could have picked it back up and kept him.
The option was still outrageous for a number three. I mean, I think, see, that's my thing. The regardless of your talent, we have to pay you based on what your role is going to be, not how great you are. You can go somewhere else and catch for 1,000 yards. Mm-hmm. But you come here, it's going to be about 600 because you're not going to get all the balls thrown towards you. You're going to be behind Moss and Welker, so we can't pay you that much.
I like the.
So to me, it made sense that they let him go. I don't have a problem with that. I just think it's hard. I mean, who else now? Dante Hall, career special teamer.
He's on the decline.
Ashley Lalee. Irrelevant nowadays.
There's your Floyd Keith note, by the way.
It was executive director Floyd Keith says the reports. Ah, crap. You know, ESPN and its friggin' scroll. Look at this. Look how fast they're going with this thing.
Another Providence thing, though. Marinato.
Mike Trangisi retiring after 18 seasons.
Yep, the PC connection.
Yeah. You got the ESPN scroll. They'll tell you when a guy is like 0 for 1 in a baseball game. Yeah. Because but they can't keep relevant news of two lines on for more than 1 second. Thanks, ESPN, for nothing again.
Well, it had to do with that minority coaches report.
Well,
God forbid
we put that out. That's not, you know, because it's more newsworthy that Jamal Crawford's 0 for 2 tonight in the first quarter of the Knicks Spurs game. Screw ESPN. Who else? Amani Toomer. He's more of a.
Isn't he like in his 15th year?
He retired about 5 years ago, actually. He had a big game on Sunday night, though, in Philly. Big first
Did
half.
He?
Yeah. And he didn't, you know, he didn't look too much like Marvin Harrison, just like dropping after the catch and being a vagina about it. He actually played hard in that game. I give him credit.
But I like the Devery Henderson.
Can I say that I think Devery Henderson's an interesting guy. I think, you know, not just because he's on my fantasy team, but I think he's an interesting guy.
I think he'd be just the kind of thing that they're looking for. A guy who may not have always been the star on his team, but has some talent and might want to play for maybe less money than they would have to pay one of, you know, a Gaffney or someone like that. So I think that's a very interesting one. What else you got on there? Names.
Offensive line. I don't think there's going to be many names popping up on this list for the Patriots. And among the noteworthy, I don't see
any. Any right tackles? Because that might be an area where they might make a move.
Yeah, you want John Runyon?
Old.
The tackle, isn't he?
Yeah, past his prime.
Let's see. Tackles. Tackles, anybody? Mike Goff, he's a guard, isn't he?
Don't recognize the name.
San Diego?
I think he's a guard.
They're not listing him by actual positions, and I'm not that intelligent, so I'm gonna skip that part. I'm going to skip punters and kickers
because
no one cares about those players. Plus, they've had a kicker who's probably the best in the league right now.
Yeah.
I think they're all set there. I'm trying to get to the D-line, but our internet here sucks. Good email, by the way, from John Howard.
All right.
Whoops. John in South Carolina.
Just pulled a Fred Kirsch. Giving out last names.
We can edit that, right? Okay. John says he missed the PFW show. That's okay because you're getting the extended third hour here. He loved Ty Law when he played for us. However, do we think he will be on the field Thursday? If so, do we go after him? I know he was great, but sitting down for 3 months has to have an effect. I'm shocked that they're talking about him being out there already. Now, I don't know what the hell he did during this 9-month hiatus when he wasn't playing. I imagine they said he came back. He looks like he's in good shape. I mean, he came up here for some camps, and he was, like, pudgy.
Yeah.
And he was wearing sweats for 2 months trying to run off all the fat. Apparently, he's in good shape, but again.
I would hope so. But
that's not football shape.
You're right.
But I just don't know. If he plays, Eric, he's not going to play that much.
Maybe?
What, 11, 12 snaps?
Dime?
I mean, really?
Nickel, dime packages? Probably not nickel, but.
He's not lining up outside opposite Randy Moss, so we can get that idea out of our heads right now.
Dante Culpepper signed with Detroit, what, last Wednesday?
It's true.
And by Sunday, he was starting?
And then by the third quarter,
he was awful, of course. But, you know, I don't think it's out of the question that Law could play. And I think that's probably why they signed him when they did, too, was because they knew this game was coming up. And they wanted to have some extra depth at that position.
I mean, I also think,
and they knew New England was going after him, probably.
But they've been going after him, haven't they? I mean, there's been ongoing dialogue to some degree.
Well, maybe.
Nothing noteworthy on the D-line for free agents, although Julius Peppers will be a free agent. Now, keep in mind, we're just saying what is according to this website. Some of these guys may have already re-upped, and we're just not paying attention. So if you do know that, let us know, because I'm sure as hell not Googling all these names. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah.
Linebacker is always an interesting position, because we don't really know what the hell's going to happen next year. And as soon as that
outside
page loads, we'll get to that, too.
Yeah, particularly outside? Maybe an inside?
Well, Eric Barton.
No.
You want some of the Jets scraps?
No, we tried that already.
It's like ex-Yankees and Red Sox. Ray Lewis.
The guy can still play, but that would be interesting, actually.
Your boy Teddy would be on the outs if Ray Lewis comes in. I don't need to play alongside Ray Lewis to validate my career.
Ray is still, he still has it. And he's talking about wanting to play for a while, too. So
That'll be
interesting. Mayo and Ray Lewis next to each other?
Yeah, it's not bad. He's a deplorable human being, but I'm sure.
I'm just talking about from a game. I'm not talking about personalities or anything like that.
Or the fact that
or
he's
other
a
things.
Murderer.
Yeah.
Did I say that in the air? Whoops. Monty Beisel.
He's acquitted. Oh, we tried that experiment too.
Hey, you saw that blocked kick.
He's a PR guy.
I'm a PR guy myself.
I'm a PR guy myself. I know that's total bullshit.
Who recorded that, by the way? Because there were plenty of guys standing around trying to be innocuous about the fact that they were recording the whole thing.
I don't recall how we got
I know for a fact.
I'm a PR guy myself. I know that's total bullshit.
I may or may not have had a microphone in my hand.
Yeah, so was you? I know John Wallach from EEI did. I remember that day because he was kind of like the sidler on Seinfeld, the guy that he's just walking around, he's with the mic, and he's just got his thing in his hand, but you can see the things on. And it's
I'm a PR guy myself. I know that's total bullshit.
You could have a reunion of sorts next year. You could bring back William McGinnis and Monty Beisel, and you can have this superstar linebacker core. Or you could try to win games. What do you think the Pats will do?
B.
Okay, I'm trying to get the defensive backs here, too. All right. Oh,
that's an area where
a guy from the Raiders who I can't pronounce.
Nnamdi Asomugho.
Wow.
Say that again. Nnamdi Asomugho.
Say it again.
Nnamdi Asomugho.
He's good. He's a free agent. Brian Dawkins, too old. Mike Brown, never healthy.
Yeah, he's always hurt.
Dunta Robinson. Is it Dunta?
I believe he pronounces it Dante.
Yeah, well, spell it Dante. Dunta.
Yeah, spell it D-A-N-T-E.
Did you ever see that Dennis Leary special, No Cure for Cancer? My name is spelled Say, but I pronounce it Sade. Then he goes, my name's Dennis, but I pronounce it Bruh. We need some audio clips from that special.
I like Dennis Leary.
It's very foul, but it's good. Lawyer Malloy.
No thanks.
Alan Rossum from the Niners, who returned the kickoff to the touchdown.
Guy,
yeah, I know.
Not really a cover guy.
Ronnie Harrison. Kelvin Hayden.
I got to see how he comes back from this injury.
they put John Lynch. He's a free agent now, actually. He's unemployed.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, boy. R.W. McQuarters.
No.
No McThanks. He's terrible. I'm sorry. Justin Miller.
Well,
who also is a
cut.
Free agent now.
He just got
as
cut.
Well, so.
I think that might be.
But isn't he a bit of a problem child? He's had some issues there in New York. I mean, didn't he fall into the doghouse?
But.
Not just performance wise. Am I correct? Or would somebody else know that better than I would?
Probably
a New York writer.
Probably, yeah. But.
I could have sworn he had some other issues there and they were disenchanted with him for a number
maybe.
Of reasons.
I wouldn't be surprised if New England's doing its due diligence on him, though.
Not
right
that
now.
That stops them from signing guys. I mean, they've signed guys with sketchy past
of
before.
Course. And it's worked out.
They worked
out pretty well, actually.
They put Darren Sharper on this list. And under the listing for team, it says Darren Sharper. he plays for himself.
He plays for himself, right.
So to answer your question, whoever the hell emailed us that, because it was so long ago.
John from South Carolina?
Oh, it was Darren from Wales.
Oh, that's right.
We really didn't
even
answer his question. We just killed 20 minutes going over all the free agents in the league. That we don't even know if they're free agents or not. So we really screwed the pooch on
that
one.
As far as notable free agents, we kind of did. Matt Castle's the big one, and I think we've agreed that Wilfork has another year, but I think they're trying to renegotiate with him now.
Yeah, I think that will get done. I'd be shocked if he wasn't. To be honest with you, by the end of the year, and I know that's not their protocol, but something could get done. I don't want to say a handshake deal, but behind closed doors to say, listen. Play and we'll work this out. We'll take care of you. It's going to be fine. And I think they can give him some reassurance.
Well, you think about it. His options on the market, as good as he is at Pro Bowler now, his options might be limited because he excels as a 3-4 nose
tackle. Exactly. How many teams?
Not that many teams play a 3-4. And to ask him to go into a 4-3 if he were to sign with someone else, maybe he wouldn't be as effective in that role. You know what I'm saying? So. This could be another case where he knows how good he has it. Of course, he's going to want his money, but it might be like with Seymour a few years ago where they were willing to make that concession.
Well, they had to give Seymour
because they knew
hike
what they
for
had.
1 year.
Yeah.
because they couldn't even get the deal done. And that thing was kind of strange. Our buddy Darren does email back, and speaking of Joe Calzaghe, he says, Joe's a class act, the only good thing in Wales. So doesn't really like Wales too much.
Wow.
Says, thanks for answering the question. Could you tell me how New England signed Castle? No one knew anything about him. Did Pete Carroll have something to do with it?
Well, they drafted him. Drafted him in the seventh round.
And maybe Carroll had some input. I mean, they had to have some input from somewhere because he didn't play.
Well,
so
they also scout USC
yeah.
for other players. And when they go to these pro days, somebody has to throw the ball. If they're scouting a receiver, let's say, and USC always has talented receivers,
right.
there's a quarterback who has to throw the ball to them. All right. Now, everybody knew Carson Matt Leinart, who came out the same time, was going to be a first-round pick, but he would also have his own pro day. So when they went to scout the wide receivers or the other skill position guys at USC, they saw Matt Castle throwing the ball to these guys and said, hey, you know, this guy's got some talent.
Right.
And I don't think he went to the combine, but he was scouted enough from scouts looking at other players that they knew about him. I don't think Pete Carroll really had anything to do to convince them, because they already saw by doing their homework on other guys at USC that he was a legitimate prospect. And by, seventh round, why not take a flyer on a guy like that?
You know, it was obviously a big roll of the dice because he never played. I mean, he's one of the more unique situations in the league among quarterbacks who never played in college.
I mean,
mostly everybody, and even at some small scrub D1 AA school where they threw for 10,000 yards, has some background, and he has none in that regard. But, hey, clearly they saw something in him. Mm-hmm. Darren also asked us if there are any tight ends on the free agent list, because Ben must go.
Well,
I don't think Ben's going anywhere, because I'm looking at this list and I see Desmond Clark, Leonard Pope, Daniel Wilcox.
Well, and you'd be looking for a tight end who
can block,
who can be like an Antonio Gates or a Tony Gonzalez, or, you know.
There aren't a lot of those guys
Shockey.
Out there.
And there aren't that many guys like that out there to begin with, so to try to find one.
I shouldn't say stuck, but they're kind of...
They're forced to go with what they have.
Right. Forced is more like it. Stuck makes it seem like they hate who they have, and I can't tell you if they hate who they have or not, so that wouldn't be fair. Let's see. Any more emails? Yes!
Well, read them!
John in South Carolina says, I watched Justin Miller for 3 years at Clemson. He can be amazing at times. Is it possible the right environment could turn him into another Asante? Or is problems all health and less mental?
Well, I don't know. I don't know enough about him to answer that properly. But like I said, I think New England is probably doing its research on him now to try to figure that out. Because
yeah, I would expect he comes in for a workout more than likely. But again, that depends on what we talked about in the previous show. They haven't made any roster move yet. They're still at 53, so they really can't do anything right now until somebody goes on IR.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that we assume would be Adalys Thomas. And there are some forces, some possible outside forces or something internally where they haven't done that yet. Because
mm-hmm.
by all accounts, he's out for the year. So it may be a wait on that. And you know what? If there is something, Eric, that's preventing them from doing this, they could miss the boat on a guy like a Justin Miller who's out there now. Because there may be other teams with the ability to say, hey, we can clear space tomorrow,
right.
And we can bring them in.
Well, I think
so. You wonder if they're going to miss the boat on guys because of this situation, whatever it may be.
Maybe.
We'll see.
But if they're out there at this point in the season, there's a reason for that.
Does this smell like cigarette smoke in here, or is it just me? I feel like this head cold congestion, like it's my allergies are just...
Could be.
Boom, I'm closed in. I'm just...
You sick too now?
No, I'm not sick.
Well...
Physically, mentally.
Yeah, mentally.
Mentally, very possible.
We've established that.
Nah. LeBron James, by the way, set some kind of a standard or record.
What, last night?
No, yeah. 4 40-point games in his team's first nine, something ridiculous.
And,
the last person to do it was Jordan.
Oh.
The second year they won a title, which was 92. The second of their six, I think, was 92. They beat Portland that year.
What did they do, 1, 2, 3...
Then 4 and 5 were the Rockets.
They did 2, 3 in a row.
Yeah.
They did 2, 3
and in between
piece.
The Rockets 1, 2. It was 94-95 because the Knicks should have beat the Rockets in 94.
Right. And then it was the 6, 7, 8 where they won it again?
Yes.
So then
96
yeah.
was the year they went 72-10, something ridiculous like that. Okay.
So
I only brought that up because I just saw LeBron flash on the screen and I got a little bit bored and I'm trying to kill time.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
I think if Rook ever goes away, you guys can do a show. We could have PFW in progress, then ADD in progress. That would be tremendous.
I don't see anybody else contributing anything to the discussion topics. In other words, like, give me a launching point.
You're going to have a Dallas Thomas in progress?
Yeah.
AD defense?
The problem is, Gary, is we just went through 2 hours of talking about these topics.
Well, no, the problem is Fred sent everybody to call WEEI. I think that's the problem.
I don't think anybody took him seriously. All of our listeners are like in France and Wales. Do you think they're calling EEI?
We gave him the toll-free number.
That's a good point. The cheap bastard line, as I call it. I'm too cheap to use my cell phone minutes, so I'll call toll-free.
Here's the Floyd Keith thing again.
Floyd Keith says the reports message is the process. What the? Oh, come on! First of all, it's not even written that it makes sense. The reports message. What is that? There's no words. I can't read this.
ESPN is just...
To play us out?
Oh, my God.
What does that mean, to play us out?
I don't know.
Live. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. Thing sucks.
I'm telling you, we need these cameras rolling because, and we need them rolling like off air because we would have many of those moments.
Oh yeah.
With just two gender alone, like Andy. Could you picture Andy trying to read like a promo and I get no sound in the headphones. I can't hear nothing. And then he starts calling them an a-hole and a douche and all that stuff.
Is this the man?
The perfect YouTube fodder. Andy Hart meltdown. On PFW in progress. I could see that getting like 10,000 hits a day.
Yeah.
Probably 8,000 from us.
Betty Rubble.
I mean, we'd have to script it, but we could, you know, make it look good. No, we don't have to, actually. We don't script anything.
We're better when we're unscripted.
So, okay, we had four emails today. And
thing sucks!
Four emails from two people. I'll tell you. We got killed. We got hammered.
It's not about quantity, it's about quality.
The emails were fine. It just the quality of this first hour was just completely abysmal. Holy cow!
We're doing fine, Mike. Just
Man, I can't do this anymore. You know what? I think I'm announcing my resignation. Going to Fred's office afterward. I'm giving him my 2 weeks and telling him
The Albany Times Union.
Yeah, back to the home of
Siena basketball,
Siena hoops. Yeah, I could not picture what life would be like if I were living in Albany.
We got a listener that writes in from Albany. He's not happy. So
no
I think you made the right choice.
You know what? All of our emailers hate where they live. I noticed that. This Joe Calzaghe is the only good thing about Wales. Albany sucks. I hate this town. I don't know.
We live in Providence. I love it there.
I like Providence, too. Hey, Todd Porter, if you had to pick the team MVP, says, Paul is discussing the gay Olympics and hasn't mentioned your name yet, Eric.
Yeah, very funny.
They are talking about the gay games.
Put it on.
The gay games?
That cut back on TNA, Travel and Entertainment. They're going
to TNA. All I heard was TNA.
If the business is hurting, that's one of the first areas that get cut back. So,
as well as advertising.
Right, so you're right about that.
I guess the gay Olympic topic ran out of steam.
Yeah.
Or they could not keep it up.
Gosh, yeah.
Are we done yet? I mean, really?
We're good. Don't just... He'll be good.
Gary hates us right now.
Come on, we're doing fine.
I couldn't hear that. There's no sound in the headphones.
We have a caller.
Hey, who is it?
John in Rhode Island.
John in Rhode Island. Johnny.
And your mom's business?
How we doing?
How are you doing?
Oh, it's John Rook. Oh, it's only John.
How's your voice,
everybody,
John?
Calm down.
It's better. Thank you.
You've got the Barry White thing going on again, John.
I know.
That's twice this year.
Hey, listen, yesterday I had not even a squeak.
Really?
Not even a squeak.
That's been Mike's problem for a while.
Ooh,
that
squeak.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe a week.
You know, and the problem is, though, that I've been, like, you know, chomping at the bit to get to do stuff, you know, for this week because it's such a short turnaround and, you know, and everything else that's going to happen. And I've looked at several of the matchups between the Pats and the Jets, and I gotta tell you, I think most everybody that I've read over the course of the last 24 hours or so, they favor the Jets tomorrow night.
Really?
Yeah.
You know,
most everybody seems to think the Jets are going to turn the corner because this is a bigger game for them and their franchise and their development and yada yada yada.
I think people are feeding off the 47-3 win.
Yeah,
I think if they just squeaked by the Rams, I don't think it'd be so overwhelming. I think people just bank off the last thing they saw.
Well, you know, the Rams, they played well as soon as Linehan was fired and Haslett took over. and there was a little bit of a honeymoon period. And
I agree.
They were winning a couple of games. Then they came to New England, lost.
Reality set
and
in.
And reality's starting to set in. I think we're seeing the real Rams team again.
Change of scenery crap. You know, there's a new coach here. Let's play hard for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so, now we're back to sucking again.
I'm not saying that that diminishes what the Jets did to them because
you
put 47 points on a team in the NFL. That's pretty good. But
this team couldn't do it here.
I don't know. I don't think the Jets are as advanced as they come across.
I would say they're more dangerous now, though, than they were in week two because I think they know each other better.
I would agree with that particular assessment, and I think they're kind of looking at, well, you know what, Chris Jenkins,
can lead
the defense to stop, you know, the Patriots running game that's been relying on, you know, law firm to basically carry him here in the last couple of weeks. They got Darrell Revis, who's now, you know, being tutored up close and personal by Ty Law, should be able to shut down Randy Moss and anybody else that the Patriots decide
Revis
to run.
And Butthead.
Revis and Butthead. I like that. That's good.
That'd be Favre, right? Favre the Butthead.
I was thinking law, if you wanted to go there.
Okay, absolutely.
Okay. All right,
absolutely.
Go on,
that's
Jones.
What I was thinking, too. So, I mean, I just, you know, I think they look at it like the Jets' defense can slow down the Patriots' offense and that Patriots' defense is missing a key cog with Thomas now, you know, the latest of those put on IR. So I think they just kind of feel like it's the Jets' turn.
Our buddy Chris asked if Gerard Mayo should win Defensive Rookie of the Year, and he wants to know so badly he asked us twice, so I will say yes, he should.
Yes.
I think he should at this point.
Yes.
There you go, buddy.
I agree. He's been on 95% of the snaps?
Scale back a little bit more in recent weeks, but I think that's more just to spell him down the stretch than anything else. I don't think it's performance-related.
But we're also starting to see more versatility from him. We talked about it earlier in the show, John. He's dropping back into coverage a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
We saw him covering Dallas Clark for a lot of the Indy game.
Yes, that's true.
He got a little bit of a pass rush in against Buffalo this week. He's starting to, now that he's comfortable in the system, starting to show the versatility that he had at Tennessee, and I think that puts him... You know, he just won the Defensive Player of the Month award, Rookie Defensive Player,
right.
For October. I think he's the leading candidate right now. I think he's leading or is in the top two in tackles on the team right now. He's the leading
Chris
candidate.
Chris says he leads all rookies in tackles, so
I think he's
I
your leading candidate.
I can't think of anybody else. Right. No one else.
As long as he doesn't get himself hurt as well, I think he would probably get it.
The guy who won it in September was Redskins safety Chris Horton, I believe, from UCLA. Mm-hmm. If you win Defensive Player of the Month as a rookie, you're in contention,
exactly.
Obviously. But I think Mayo has proven the number of snaps he's played, leading the team in tackles, leading rookies in tackles, showing this versatility now. I think he's your guy. I think
all you have to worry about is somebody having a freak month where he picks off five passes and it sways the voting.
But now here's
that can happen.
Here's the amazing thing. If you think back to last year when there was talk that New England was going to try to maybe trade up and get Patrick Willis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
If they had done that and they still had this pick this year to get Mayo, they would have had two young players who in the middle linebacker who are outstanding. Willis won it last year. Now, right. I know obviously if they make that trade last year to trade up to get him, they might not have the pick this year. But
yeah, I'm wondering the ramifications of that.
You know, that could have changed things. But who's to say they wouldn't have traded up this year to get him as well?
Right.
I mean, that's just an interesting
Again,
scenario.
The Floyd Key thing makes no sense the way it's written.
Yeah.
We're
missing the beginning of that, obviously.
What was the Floyd Key thing?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out.
There was some good URI football talk.
Oh, God.
Floyd Keith happened to be
mentioned on ESPN because there's some report from minority coaches.
Yeah, he's the executive director of the Black Coaches Association.
Exactly.
And some report just came out.
And we can't read it because the scroll is going too fast.
But. It has to do with the fact that he's lamenting that there just aren't enough black hires. That's all.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you know what? There was actually something on CBS about that during one of the games on Saturday. They said there were only about, what, four or five, like a handful in college?
Well, look at it this way. I mean, Ty Willingham is getting canned, so there's one less right there.
Is Sylvester Croom, is he still down at Mississippi State?
Yeah, he's still at Mississippi State.
I mean, four out of like 300 schools is bad. Four out of 32 NFL teams is not so bad. But, you know, the ratio and the percentage is ridiculous. Yeah, I could see, I guess, where he has a problem. But, you know, that's another issue.
Well, you have to understand that's an agenda-driven organization.
Of course.
And it is, you know, they've got to keep pushing the envelope until they feel like they get equity. So that's fine. I understand that.
Does Floyd Keith coach with anybody now?
No.
No, he hasn't coached since he left URI.
He can't coach.
This is also true.
Yeah. What do you got for us, John, in the second hour?
Well, believe it or not, we've been able to finagle Russell Baxter from his normal Thursday slot to Wednesday, since he understands that we'll all be getting ready for a game at the same time tomorrow. So Russell's going to join us in the second hour of the program, and B-Lo's also going to come and join us.
Yeah, he just walked through the door.
Speaking of bad radio.
So there you go. So we're going to try to slough through the final hour of the program with at least half a voice today. And guys, may I add here that I sincerely appreciate your stepping into the breach here.
Hey, no problem. We ruined the first hour
players.
Of the show. I hope you didn't listen to it.
We're team players. We talked about all kinds of things.
Heard you guys throw me into the bus a couple of times.
No, come on.
Best ever playbook that's ever been on.
That's backhanded at best.
But there have been other hosts, too.
Hey, you left me flat for 2 weeks, John.
That's
you went
right.
to go do your little Thursday
that's
night
right.
thing.
I did.
Come on.
Well, I guess that's going to do it then for the two of us, Eric and I, not Eric and me.
See,
we do it for Eric and me.
See, that's good. That's good.
We're back on that again. But anyway, John, thank you for letting us ruin the first hour. We'll let you guys clean up the mess in the second.
Now, are you sick, John, or did you just yell too much?
I actually asked Gary, because I was the one that was starting to squeak and break down with the wheels flying off at the game
during
on Sunday.
During the game.
During the game?
Yeah.
Oh,
Bilo, you almost got a phone call.
From who?
Really?
Wow. No, Bilo almost got a phone call.
Oh, Bilo almost
me.
Got a phone call. Yes, he did. He did.
Good for
so
another Patriots. Call the dugout.
Yeah,
bring in the lefty.
Had to go to the left hand.
We didn't have to dip into Pawtucket, luckily.
Wow.
Unbelievable. That has never happened to me in 30 years.
Wow.
In 30 years of broadcasting, I've never had to step aside in the middle of actually doing a game.
Well,
so
you better bring your awesome. Ricolas on Thursday.
Well, fortunately, there's a longer time period between home games this week than
that's
ever
true.
Before. You know, 72 full hours, I think.
Yes, 72 hours, which is why, you know, we've been taking it extra easy, and I basically can float on green tea that I've been drinking this week. So
with Joe Torre now? Okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
Pretty much.
Well, we'll leave the second hour up to you guys then.
Very good.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place, a once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie, both served on multi-grain bread
With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because okay. The backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5.
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Well, that was a heck of a start, wasn't it? Take a deep breath and just cough. Welcome back inside hour number two of Patriots Playbook. John Rook here with you for this Wednesday. And again, thanks to both Mike and to Eric for filling in the opening hour. And,
obviously, you didn't listen to it then.
Yeah, well, a little bit of the show. For those that are uninitiated, yes, I have been battling laryngitis over the course of the last 72 hours since the Patriots game was completed on Sunday. I've got a little left in the tank today, and hoping to keep most of it since we have the game tomorrow. So, to that end, Brian Lowe from Patriots Today has made his way downstairs into the studio to give us a hand today. Be Lowe.
I don't have much of a voice either, John. I don't know if I can pull it off.
No, nice I'm here. Job. I'm here for you, John. Here for you anytime. You know, it's a weird, weird schedule for the team this week. Usually I come in with you on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Tuesday was a Wednesday. Today's a Wednesday, but for the team it's kind of like a Friday, maybe a Saturday. Tomorrow's a Sunday.
It's a weird
week. I can't
keep
track, but you know what? Hey, when I get called in from the bullpen, you know, I'm always happy to help.
You the man. And calling him in from the bullpen a day early, in fact, working the middle innings instead of the late innings of our baseball game, ESPN's NFL coordinator, Russell Baxter. Hello, Russell.
Hello, John. I'm sorry you're here. You're under weather, but after hearing Brian explain all that, I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
Oh, we're as confused as anyone, but you know what? They throw us these Thursday game curveballs, and if you hear Bill Belichick speak, you know, that's the way he talks. You know, today's a this, tomorrow's a that. Who can really keep track? They'll play a football game tomorrow, whatever day they want to call it.
Yeah, I was at the game.
Yes, he was. Well, you understand, of course, that because it's such a bizarre week for us and a short week and everybody trying to get into the whole Thursday night thing, which, by the way, to me, I love. I love the fact that we get a chance now, and with the exception, of course, of the Monday night game, to look forward to something earlier in the week. And I think that was the entire intent of NFL Network trying to move into this Thursday package. Was it not, Russell?
Yeah, and if you notice this year, they're pretty much exclusively Thursday night games this year. They have one Saturday night game, which is a Ravens at Cowboys, which will be the final regular season game, or maybe final game at Texas Stadium. But everything else is a Thursday, so they kind of shifted their emphasis. But again, I'm sorry I'm not going to be talking to you so much, John, because I really kind of dig that Brenda Vaccaro thing you got going here.
Brenda Vaccaro. I like it. That's good. Well, hey.
Well, that's
beats
my
the heck
generation,
out of,
so. Well,
beats
somebody
the heck
else will
out
say
of,
Demi Moore, but what do they know? So.
Kathleen
beats the
Turner.
Heck out of Squiggy from yesterday, because that's what I was like yesterday.
Kathleen
Benny and
Turner,
from
John?
Laverne and Shirley?
I think I'll lean toward Kathleen Turner.
Okay.
Just
Kevin
for obvious
Turner.
Reasons.
Yeah, obviously. Well, let's go ahead and start then with the game for tomorrow night simply because it's on the agenda. And the fact is that both teams have to turn it around rather quickly. But I was just mentioning with the PFW guys just a little while ago, Russell, that frankly, from everything that I've read over the last 24, 48 hours, there's a lot of sentiment in this game going toward the Jets. And their opinion was is that because the Jets just absolutely steamrolled St. Louis and winning 47-3, and they're probably getting a little bit of bounce from that. So do you feel like that is the case, number one? And number two, who's this a bigger game for, Jets or the Patriots?
Well, I mean, I think the Jets still have to, like we have talked about the Buffalo Bills in recent weeks, and it's interesting how that's come to fruition. They all of a sudden they start playing the division, they're 0-3. And now their losing streak to the Patriots is now 10.
Right.
The Jets have yet to prove they can consistently beat this team. And, you know, I think everybody, you know, I almost get the sense of going into this game, John, very much like everybody jumped on the Jets in week two because all of a sudden Tom Brady went out. And suddenly 19-10, New England wins again. The facts are the facts. The Jets have lost four straight and 11 out of 12 to New England, including that playoff game in Foxborough a couple years ago. The one win was 2 years ago in Foxborough in the regular season when Chad Pennington was there, and they were able to get a lot of heat on Brady that day. But I'm going to stick with the philosophy, at least for now, and I know we'll talk about it, is I think it's a bigger game for the Jets because they have yet to consistently prove they can beat the big boy in the division.
And the games that they have won this year, Russell, in this stretch where they've won 5 out of 6, among those wins, and again, you can only play who they tell you to play and where, but Kansas City, Cincinnati, they barely beat Kansas City, and it was St. Louis last week, and the game they lost was to Oakland in overtime. You'd have to say that they have a lot to prove, aside from the rivalry with the Patriots, a lot to prove as far as are they for real as a 6-3 team contending for the division in 2008? What can we really say about this team, about this Jets team, over as far as what they've done over this last 5-6 week stretch?
Well, they've won more games over the last 5 or 6 weeks than they did all of last year.
True,
which is you know, that's one step in the right direction. I think the thing I've liked about them in recent weeks is they're starting to get that running game going, and you're seeing a lot out of Thomas Jones. And their offensive line, which they went to a lot of trouble to revamp this year with the additions of Damian Woody and, of course, Alan Faneca, looks like it's finally starting to kind of come into its own. But yet, over that stretch of the last 5 or 6 weeks, per se, you know, they also lay a clunker to the Oakland Raiders. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that, I think, has to lay in the back of your mind as well. You know, it also has to lay in the back of your mind that at any one time, Brett Favre, as prolific as he is, can also throw the ball to the other team.
Right.
And, you know, he's had 3 interceptions returned for touchdowns this year. That can swing the momentum of a game really, really quick. In fact, I think it was an interception by Brandon Merriweather that changed the momentum of the first game when they played back in week two.
That's right.
So I think they do have things to prove. But, of course, this is an intense rivalry game, and it is a rivalry. You know, a lot of people say, well, it's not a rivalry if it's one-sided. It is a rivalry, and it goes back even further than when Belichick was here, as you guys well know. And I just think as far as this, the importance and the mindset, whereas I think the Jets are surging right now, I still think the game means much more to them because they have to prove that they can get the job done. And, you know, if it comes down later in the year that they're sitting at 10-6 and 4-2 in the division, and 2 of the losses are both in New England again, that means no division title. So, you know, they didn't make all the changes that they made this year to not make the playoffs or settle for a wild card.
And obviously the biggest change is the one that came towards the end of the offseason with bringing in Favre. And the Patriots saw the Jets in week two when he was still very new to this team and all that. Now, in talking to some of the Patriots players over the course of this week, they seem to think that there's been a little change in what Favre has been asked to do with the offense. They're relying on the run game. And while they didn't use the phrase managing the game, I don't think you can say that about Favre, they've seen a bit of a difference in the way he's been handling the offense and all that. What have you seen out of Favre, and what do you think the Patriots are going to see that's different from what they saw back in week two?
You know, and I'm sure John will agree with me, Brian. You know, the word managing the game has become like this dirty word in the NFL.
Yeah.
I always thought that's what the quarterback was supposed
sure.
to do.
Yeah.
Okay? I have seen offenses, with all due respect to what Brady accomplished last year, I have seen the high-scoring one-man show in terms of the quarterback putting up these enormous numbers and the quarterback, in essence, kind of carrying the team offensively, all result in non-championships.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There have been five instances in NFL history where a quarterback has thrown 40 or more touchdown passes, just throwing out some numbers. The first four, the highest totals, a 50 by Brady, a 49 by Peyton Manning,
mm-hmm.
a 48 by Dan Marino, a 44 by Dan Marino. No championship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Dan Marino threw 44 touchdown passes in 1986 and didn't even make the playoffs. Two of those guys lost Super Bowls, Brady and Marino. And, of course, Peyton Manning, the season ended up in Foxborough in the snow when they scored a field goal in the divisional playoffs. There's a reason it's a team game. And to me, one of the things that made Brett Favre so successful last year is what did the Packers, you know, amongst other things, what was their – they led the league in category last year was yards after the catch. He got used to his new receiving core last year, and guys like Greg Jennings and James Jones and as Boomer likes to say, no one doesn't like David Lee.
Mm.
And those guys, he got the ball to them as soon as possible. He had the balance from Ryan Grant. The more the merrier. I mean, you want everybody involved in your offense, not just one person carrying it.
Sure.
And I think that tendency with Brett is, because he has the gunslinger mentality, you think that's what he wants to do sometimes. But I think he's just kind of getting more acclimated to the guys around him. I think the key in this is not only finding out what they can do, but sometimes what they can't do, which I think is a huge key in the game of football, and putting guys into positions to succeed. And I think Brett's kind of just getting used to it. I mean, he still hasn't played 10 games. This will be game 10.
Right.
And, of course, he didn't really have, per se, a real training camp this year either. You know, so it's, you know, there's been a lot of changes here for the Jets. They already had an enormous amount of changes from a year ago. And then, of course, you had the quarterback almost like at the last minute. So maybe they're kind of starting to hit their stride. I'll say this. We spend so much time talking about Favre and all that stuff. The thing that's been impressive with them the last couple of weeks, and you know, regardless of who they're playing, their defense is starting to really come into its own. The two guys, and by the way, doing it a lot without David Harris.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good second-year inside linebacker. The two guys that have really stood out in recent weeks have been Chris Jenkins, who, again, here's another guy who's a 4-3 defensive tackle, now playing the 3-4 nose.
Right.
And the second-year cornerback, Darrell Revis, who's starting to make little overtones that he could be a Pro Bowl player.
Well, that was what I was going to bring up next was the Jets' defense, and you mentioned the overhaul that they had in the offseason, and a lot of the changes, or quite a few, came on the defensive side with Jenkins and Pace, and they're really coming into their own. And, even Matt Castle today, his press conference seemed to be floored by some of the stats rattling off, you know, the fact that 16 different guys have had sacks this year and all these different interceptions. What has been the big difference? How much of an impact? I mean, we're seeing how much of an impact Chris Jenkins can make. Is it all Chris Jenkins? What kind of an impact has he had, and how good really is this run defense?
Well, he has. Again, you know, the difference of just putting a stick in a big body in there in a 3-4 opposed to playing a 4-3. You know, if you're playing the 3-4 successfully, your nose tackle is tying up two, at times three guys, and that enables your outside linebackers to play. And I don't think it's any mistake or coincidence that the other guy is starting to play well in recent weeks has been Calvin Pace, the outside linebacker who they gave huge money to, who was with the Arizona Cardinals, who just became an outside linebacker in recent years. Remember, he was a defensive end at Wake Forest, and the Cardinals really didn't know what to do with him. They finally, when they shifted their defense, made him. So there's a lot of transitions going on here with positions guys are playing and so on. And now that we're getting toward the middle of the season and guys have been playing together for a number of months, not only regular season and preseason, but training camp, you know, this team, especially defensively, seems to really start to be coming into its own. I mean, to me, the best way to describe the Jets is a work in progress. I'm not sure how truly good they are yet, but they seem like they're headed in the right direction, and that can only pay dividends. Now, whether that direction means that they're ready to go into Foxborough and beat a team that, regardless of the personnel, seems to have their number, are two totally different things.
I saw on the website on ESPN.com where they were rating the teams again. And the Patriots moved up big in their power rating poll this week, which is, okay, great, I guess. But whoever wrote it,
yeah,
and I'm not sure who wrote it.
I'm not sure what BCS game any of those teams are going to be in.
Exactly.
That's curious. Right. So I think Texas Tech plays the Patriots next week.
Hey, listen.
That'd be a great game.
Texas Tech probably be a 7-point favorite. So, but whoever wrote the blurb, Russell, mentioned that Matt Castle is now a bona fide NFL starter. And I found that as shocking, number one, because it's the first time anybody that I've seen in the national media has said anything close to that about Matt Castle.
Well, I don't think you can deny what he's done. I mean, I think a lot of credit has to go to the Patriots coaching staff. You know, people got so used to seeing what New England did last year that they forgot what New England was when they won their first Super Bowl. And that's not a criticism. That's the beauty of the New England Patriots and why they've been successful for this decade is they have changed constantly, not just the personnel, but their style of play. They really were four different kinds of teams that went to their four Super Bowls. One of my favorite stats, I think it's become one of my favorite stats of all time, is when New England won its first Super Bowl in 2001, their offense scored three touchdowns in three playoff games. We got used to seeing Tom Brady score three touchdowns in about 7 or 8 minutes last year.
Mm-hmm.
But the results were the same. You got to a Super Bowl. Of course, they won the Super Bowl in 2001. But their offense and was not prolific. This is not a prolific offense either. But it's playing within yourself and making the most of the people that you have, and I think Bill Belichick and his staff has done a great job of that. They now know they're not going to have Adalys Thomas for a little bit, or maybe not the rest of the season. So they will adjust with that as well. You know, the beauty of overhauling their roster the way they have done with free agency in recent years, maybe throughout their tenure in terms of the Belichick era, is you get used to people not being there sometimes. And, you know, that's why, you know, sometimes Bill Belichick kind of gets that knock of, well, the quarterback or the running back or the, you know, when he describes guys as positions rather than names and everybody is so quick to jump on him being this, you know, cold person, you know, he's putting it in the terms that he understands. You know, while we want to sit there and debate and talk and blah, 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 he's thinking, I've got to replace this component with another component and I have to be successful in doing it. And the success means they're tied for first place in the AFC East right now.
And, you know, this AFC East, much like the NFC East, is just so intriguing. And as of right now, and kind of like last week as well, you got two teams at 6-3, two at 5-4. We know the way the NFL works these days with, you know, the schedule. The teams play pretty much, you know, almost entirely the same opponents.
Yes.
As things continue to shake out here, and the Patriots are in the middle of a three-game stretch in the AFC East, Buffalo is just finishing up a three-game stretch in the AFC East. You know, we're getting into mid-November here in the home stretch. How do you see this division shaking out as we move on these next 6-7 weeks?
Well, I think Buffalo's three-game stretch was crippling.
Yeah,
to be honest with
yep.
you, because here's
you
I'm
can't
just,
go 0-3. You can't
I'm
go
just,
0-3.
But I'm just going to do math more than anything else, Brian.
Yeah.
What's the best they can be in the division?
3-3.
Right. That doesn't usually win you a lot of tiebreakers.
Yeah. Yep.
And that also means that they still have to go and play the Jets in New York
mm-hmm.
and win. And that means in a game that they probably didn't think about it then, they have to play the Miami Dolphins at home. But not really. That game's in Toronto.
Right.
Which I believe is indoors.
Which is advantage Miami.
Which kind of neutralizes the advantage they had.
Right.
So that's not quite the same either. I mean, I think the Bills have made a lot of strides, but they've really, really hurt themselves. I think the team to watch that's going to be interesting down the stretch is Miami.
Yep.
And this is a team, and who would have thunk it? But they're now 5-4. More importantly, they're 2-1 in the division. They beat the Bills. They beat the Patriots. And it's one thing to be the perfect example. Miami is 5-4 and 2-1 in the division, like we just said. I'm repeating myself.
Yep.
The Buffalo Bills in the AFC East and the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC East are both 5-4, and both of them are 0-3 in the division. So in terms of winning a division title, they've probably crippled themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, Philadelphia has lost home division games to the Giants and the Redskins, so their task is absolutely monumental. But the point is, you got to win these games that are so very, very important. The Bills didn't get a chance to get that done. It's also most important that you got to hold serve in the division. Hopefully you steal one on the road. And that's why I'll repeat again, it's so important for the Jets to win this game, because they did not hold serve against the Patriots back in week two, and they got to kind of make up for it. I mean, they got a little bounce back by winning in Buffalo.
Right.
But they're going to have to beat New England to kind of get themselves back on the. Somebody's going to have to go 4-2 or 5-1 in this division to win the division.
Right.
Let's jump through some of the other games since we have you here on a Wednesday anyway. I realize it's a little bit early, but a couple of great ones, I think, on the docket.
Well, I already know everything anyway, so what the hell is the difference? So.
Thank you. How about Baltimore playing at the New York Giants? The Ravens all of a sudden showing some offense, and the Giants still showing like they are a Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, you have to really like what you've seen out of both teams. Baltimore's kind of playing that defense again, although – Big news this week is losing a couple of DBs. I believe both Chris McAllister and DeJuan Landry are now out for the year.
Right.
So they took some hits in their secondary. But how about young Joe Flacco? Six touchdown passes and zero interceptions in his last four games. All wins, guys. He threw one touchdown and seven picks in the first five games. Pretty nice turnaround from the rookie from Delaware. I mean, obviously, big story this year has been the new head coaches and new quarterbacks in Atlanta and Baltimore. But speaking of old, and I guess they're not really old, but the Giants just keep on chugging along. They win another big road game, as they did last week in New York. In Philadelphia. They just find the ways to win. I mean, a little surprising that Philly put 31 points on the board against them, the way the Giants' defense has played as of late. The Giants didn't get a sack on McNabb, so they usually follow their usual formula. But they were able to run the ball right down the Eagles' throat. You know, there's been a lot of fun with the quote-unquote earth, wind, and fire combo of Brandon Jacobs and Ahmad Bradshaw and Derek Ward. But it's the second week in a row, guys, that the three of them have combined for over or at least 200 yards rushing.
Good, solid numbers.
Absolutely.
Good, solid numbers.
Hey, it's Tom Coughlin. Here's what we forget about Tom Coughlin. You guys know this. Remember his days with the Giants, even though he didn't serve that role.
Right.
When he was in Jacksonville, what was the hallmark of his team? Offensive line.
Sure.
The
line
Giants
play.
Are the best offensive
the
line
ball.
In football.
Mm-hmm.
They've kept it together for a year and a half. It was key to their run last year. They run, they pass, very cohesive group, and they kind of paved the way. I think they set the tone. We're also caught up about Plexico and Eli and all the other components and, you know, the defense missing people. That offensive line is the one constant. And it's the reason they're as good as they are.
How about this one that could affect the Patriots and or anybody else in the AFC East? San Diego playing at Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, the Chargers, I guess they're the enigma of the league. And last week, of course, real kind of interesting game holding on against Kansas City. You know, Herm Edwards deciding to go for the win rather than the tie. But, I mean, they seem like they just kind of wake up sometime in the second or third quarter and say, oh, well, we got a game today, maybe we'll play. You know, Pittsburgh's another story. You know, a lot about Ben Roethlisberger and his recent problems and getting sacked a lot and eight interceptions in the last three games. The Steelers, to me, whereas the Chargers are kind of a lost team, the Steelers are kind of a lost offense. They've once again lost their identity. They don't run the football. And then pretend to be a power football team when they need to be. I thought that one of the keys in that loss to the Colts last week was, moving the ball down the field via the pass, and then they get inside the five-yard line and take three cracks with the running game, and then they wonder why they get stuffed. This team has not tried to establish the line of scrimmage. It's like they want Ben Roethlisberger to do everything, and it just doesn't work that way. And I think... Anytime you put it, we talked about that earlier, anything you put the emphasis on one guy, it's never going to work. I just think the key to this game is figuring out which version San Diego shows up. Now, last week, of course, I threw out this funny historical stat about the Colts, who had lost their last 12 games in Pittsburgh and hadn't won in Pittsburgh since 1968. The Chargers have their own kind of worries in Pittsburgh. They've never won a regular season game there, guys. They're 0-12.
Wow.
But funny enough, they have won two playoff games in the city of Pittsburgh, including the 1994 AFC Championship game.
Wow.
Wow. So since this is the regular season, do we favor Pittsburgh? Or then again, since one streak bit the dust last week and get the Colts, you know, this is the Enigma Bowl. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, you don't know which way to go. Enigma Bowl, sure.
Because you're really not sure what the hell team on either side is going to show up. I will say one thing about a constant, though. Pittsburgh's defense has really recaptured a lot of fire. You know, that combination, I know Lamar Woodley didn't play last week, but James Harrison is a ton of trouble for anybody to block. So,
right.
Now, Tennessee is in the middle of a very interesting stretch. They squeaked out a couple of wins, overtime against Green Bay, and then they come away with the win against Chicago, though that was a tight one. They're at Jacksonville. Is this a challenge? What kind of a challenge is this for them? Are we going to see them get to 10-0?
Well, this will be tough. I mean, you know, Jacksonville, talk about another enigma. You know, the way they started out last week against Detroit, oh, my God, were they really going to lose to the Bengals and the Lions in back-to-back week? They managed to salvage themselves. But, no, you know, I think what's interesting about Tennessee is we had made this assumption that, you know, they were kind of this stodgy offense, they were going to run the ball and so on. Well, last week they really rolled it up against the Bears, 29 carries for 20 yards. That's
amazing.
The old tripping over the equipment trunk line that you've heard from many people this week.
Yeah.
But yet Kerry Collins comes out and throws for almost 300 yards. So kudos to Jeff Fisher and the coaching job he does. Another good offensive line that keeps Kerry Collins pretty clean. They don't make a lot of mistakes and so on. The games in Jacksonville, that hasn't seemed to really matter because Tennessee seems to always give this team fits. But to me, Jacksonville, this is their season right now.
Mm-hmm.
They get back to 5-5. They at least have a fighting chance at 4-6. I think they can pretty much forget it. And I'm going to say Tennessee's streak ends this week to a very desperate Jacksonville team.
Ooh, stepping out. Like it. Hey, one of my all-time favorite matchups, Cowboys and Redskins, Sunday night.
Yeah, and with just as much importance as it usually has. It's funny how it always turns out to be important. And I guess the most important is Portis. And to see if Clinton Portis is going to play. He's kind of 50-50, I guess, this week, John.
Yeah.
To see if he's going to play or not. But, you know, both these teams have had 2 weeks to recover from kind of physical beatings. I mean, you know, Dallas got pushed around by the New York Giants one last time we saw them.
Yeah.
Jason Campbell had a very rough evening against the Pittsburgh Steelers defense. But, you know, you go back to when these guys played earlier in the year, this was kind of the game that kind of put the Cowboys into their current tailspin. It was the Redskins with that ball control offense and their offensive line who really dominated the Cowboys. The score was 26-24. Remember, Redskins had the ball for over 38 minutes in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Portis had over 100 yards. Santana Moss had a big game. Jason Campbell had a big game. They really kind of, blueprint gets used too much, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
They really kind of pushed around Dallas in that game. I'll be interested to see the mindset of both of these clubs coming back here. It's awful. This, for whatever reason, this you know, there always seems to be a split in this series more times than not. Again, I think Dallas is probably a little more desperate than Washington. In the East, everybody has to be desperate. I'm kind of leaning toward the Cowboys Sunday night.
Yep. There are a couple of division games as well involving the other teams not playing in this Thursday night game. Oakland is playing at Miami, and of course, your game on Monday night, the ESPN game, has Cleveland playing at Buffalo. I don't even know that we need to spend any time talking about Oakland at Miami, other than the fact to say that Miami's going to be 6-4. So they're going to be tied for second in the division at worst, and still only a game out of first place. And Buffalo's trying to hang on. And Cleveland has their own set of problems going on right now, although I'm sure they at least are somewhat pleased with the beginning of the Brady Quinn era.
Oh, you would think they'd have to be. It's their defense that has really been a problem. And even though one of these touchdowns I'm about to mention was a Terrell Suggs interception return of Derek Anderson, last two games the Browns have been outscored 38-7 in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
And blown double-digit leads in both of those games, both home losses to Baltimore and Denver, and that I think probably put a little bit of a tap on their season. You know, they're going to have to win three games in a row just to get back to 500. Buffalo still has some life, obviously. I think their running game, and we really have yet to see Marshawn Lynch really kind of bust out yet this year. He hasn't had 100 yards, I think, yet this year. This would probably be a good week, and that atmosphere in Monday night up in Buffalo, I think, will be pretty electric. I know the team's a little down right now because they have lost three in a row, but they're still in it. They're still in it as much as anyone. You know, listen, someone's going to lose Thursday night.
You can have three teams at 6-4.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, you know, I'm not giving the game to Miami yet, although it's hard to believe they would lose. But, of course, you know, these are the toughest games for young teams. Remember, Seattle has played horrible, and they came within a two-point conversion of tying the Dolphins last week.
That's true.
So be wary of that. Remember, Oakland with Dante Culpepper went into Miami last year and squashed them. But, of course, this is not your Dante Culpepper's Raiders. Their offense has scored 9 touchdowns in 9 games.
Wow.
This is kind of what they looked like 2 years ago. And since beating the Jets 16-13 in overtime, the Raiders have scored 16 points in 3 games.
Oof.
And they have not scored a touchdown in 9 quarters. So silver and black, take your pick with the nickname.
Silver
so
and black.
On.
I like that.
You know, no team in NFL history has ever lost at least 12 games 4 consecutive seasons. The Raiders are tied with 2 other franchises. They're going to have to really work their tookuses off here to avoid setting some infamous NFL history.
Gosh, and when you consider that they do that on the heels of going to the Super Bowl, I mean, that's just amazing.
Well, I mean, it's just astounding. So what is their record now? I believe it is 21-68 since they went to the Super Bowl.
Right.
I mean, that's just – it's almost hard to believe.
I mean, you got to screw up really bad to screw up that bad.
You have to have – you would think there were some forfeits in there.
Yeah.
And the Patriots get to visit them in about a month.
Well, yes, they do.
Yeah.
And
will they still have a team? Will they still have a franchise when we get there?
An NFL sanctioned franchise?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. They might have their union card revoked. So we'll see. I mean, it's really a shame what's happened out there. It really has. And Tom Cable, who is the latest temporary solution right now, because Lane Kiffin was fired. It's just going to be interesting where this franchise is headed. I know that a lot of things get said about Al Davis and so on, probably rightfully so. I mean, I'm obviously not hoping something happens to him and so on. I mean, you know, people can be really, really cruel. I'm sure you've heard the same jokes, until he, you know, leaves us, per se, that franchise is not going to turn around. But, you know, it's just hard to believe things have gotten as bad as they have gotten. And I don't think Al did himself many favors this year with that press conference. I think he portrayed himself as a very bitter and angry person, and at times I think even a little confused. So it's like I said, they've become a running joke as far as a franchise, you know, and that's really a shame.
Most definitely, especially when you go back to the history of the old AFL, of which, of course, the Raiders are a part of, as the Patriots are. And I think if you're a real AFL fan or an AFC fan nowadays, I think, I don't know about you, but I find myself rooting for a lot of the teams that, you know, you've been in this, you know, foray with over the last 40-plus years, you know?
Well, absolutely. Listen, it's not good for the league that the Bengals have been to the playoffs one time in 17 or 18 years. You know, it's not good for the Lions to be as bad as they are since 2001. And it's certainly not good for one of the premier franchises to be struggling the way they're struggling. So something's going to happen. I'm not sure what's going to happen. It's going to be another year. That's what we know. There's going to be another year of change in Oakland starting in 2009.
That's right. That's right. Well, Russell, we appreciate your coming in on a day off and visiting with us, visiting with the fans as well.
You can have time and a half for this, right?
Yes.
Okay,
you can have time and a half. In fact, you can just name your number, all right?
Oh, good.
Does that work for you?
Russell, you
absolutely.
Know numbers.
I'll save you some paperwork now. There'll be 6 zeros at the end of it. So,
Russell, you know numbers. What's time and a half times 0?
1495.
Sold.
I didn't say my numbers are right, but that's called grading on a curve.
Sold.
Good answer.
Hey, we appreciate it, Russell, as always. Thank you very much for spending a little time with us. And we'll try to hook up again on a regular day next week. How's that sound?
Oh, that sounds great. Enjoy that game tomorrow night. It's really going to be a blast.
I think we'll all have some fun. Definitely.
Thanks, Russell.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys.
You got it. Russell Baxter, who is the NFL research coordinator for ESPN. Honestly, he really knows how to spout that stuff out, doesn't he, Bilo?
Oh, he does. That's a great, and I don't have the chance to talk to him like you do each and every week. But boy, can he can rattle off the not just stats, but just the the way teams are playing, and we're just firing off a couple different games there at him, and he knows what the deal is for every game there. And
absolutely,
very good to talk to him. Hey, I got a quick number for you. I just noticed.
Shoot.
Name me the two NFL quarterbacks who have an identical passer rating as of right now in the NFL.
Are they up near the top of the list?
Middle of the pack.
Middle of the pack.
Yeah, middle of the pack.
Castle and Favre.
Not so
I've
much.
Always wanted to be a Packer.
How about Matt Castle? Bit of a trick question here, John.
Okay.
Matt Castle and Tom Brady have identical 83.9 passer ratings right now.
Really?
Tom Brady's 7 for 11. Tom Brady's 7 for 11 in the first quarter of the Kansas City game, leaves him with an 83.9 passer rating for the year. And right now, Matt Castle has an 83.9 passer rating as well.
How about that?
Matt Castle is Tom Brady.
These are the same passer ratings that had Kevin Falk higher than Matt Castle when he was 1 for 1 with -2 yards.
Well, Kevin Falk right now is just a couple of points behind Matt Castle at 79.2, still at 1 for 1 with -2 yards. No, he didn't slip. It's just that Castle, Castle's
he's kind of increased his little. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Kevin O'Connell, not to shortchange him, is at 90.6.
Ooh, see, he's up on top of the
team. His 3 for 4 with 25 yards against, I believe, was it San Diego? No. Who did he play? Miami? I think Miami.
It was Miami.
I think.
Yes,
yeah.
It was Miami. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
All right, let's squeeze in a timeout here, and then you and I will come back and recap, and also look forward again to tomorrow night's Thursday night encounter. How's that sound?
It sounds great for me. I'll stay.
Back with more Inside the Playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
3 kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy. And the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs. And their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from 2 delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers, Mile and Hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, as we put the wraps on Patriots playbook for a Wednesday and the final playbook for the week as well, because tomorrow, just for those of you who are wondering, hey, are we going to do anything on actual game day, because the game tomorrow night, PFW in Progress will be around tomorrow from noon until 2 p.m., but then after that, everybody's got to get ready for the game, so there will be no playbook show tomorrow, and unfortunately, B-Lo, there will be no fantasy lowdown tomorrow. Sorry.
No.
What, did the whole world take the fantasy week off?
Yeah, I know.
What are you? No, I understand. I understand. I got to get ready for the game, too. You know, I blog during the game, John, so I got a lot I really have to prepare for. You know, I take part in Hannah's Huddle, John Hannah's Roundtable Chat before the game. I got a lot, really a lot to prepare for. So
hey,
I beg Gary to give me the day off on Fantasy Lowdown.
Well, no, apparently your wish is his command, because he's going to give you the day off tomorrow. So there will be PFW in Progress for those of you listening later on as well, from noon until 2 tomorrow on Thursday game day. And then, of course, we'll be off until next week's programming. We should also mention that tomorrow night's game is a celebration of Troy Brown. We'll have a bunch of stuff with Troy concerned during well, Gary, are we doing a pregame? We're doing it at halftime mostly tomorrow. Halftime?
Halftime.
Halftime. That's what I thought. So that's pretty cool. And the fact that, you know, Troy is going to be honored by the Patriots, and I think obviously it'd be a very worthy moment for Patriots fans everywhere.
Yeah, it is pretty cool, and I think it was the Denver game that Andre Tippett night.
I need Mark Cuban.
A couple of primetime home games and not just great games, but really getting a chance to honor some of the Patriots all time greats. And Troy, you know, I mean, what a great press conference he had, whatever it was 2 months ago when he officially announced his retirement.
Horse poop.
And he didn't quite mention that phrase, but bingo, maybe.
Bingo.
There you go. You know, you can just tell.
Took the quarterback off.
Thanks.
You can just tell the admiration that Robert Kraft has for him, that Bill Belichick has for him, and you know what the fans mean to Troy Brown and what Troy Brown means to the fans. So, you know,
that'll be a love fest moment tomorrow night.
It
no
certainly
doubt.
Will. It certainly will. And you know, hopefully the Patriots. You know, be nice if the Patriots are winning at the time, and it's a nice night and all that. I'm not sure about that latter point, but you know, Troy Brown has a special place in the hearts of pretty much every fan around here. So it'll be a good night. It'll be nice to see him around. I think the fans will be in for a treat.
What do you got for Patriots today?
Well, you know, we're sort of previewing the game today, a condensed week for us too, but we've got, you know, taking a look at Favre you know, several players. It was interesting because several players this week on the defensive side, you know, Mike Vrabel, Ellis Hobbs among them. We're talking about how the Jets offense and Favre in particular have sort of come into his own now, you know, realizing that, okay, you know, we've got a pretty solid running game right now and the offensive line is performing well, and there have been some changes in the way Favre has handled the team. And it's natural because he's new to the team, but some of the Patriots players seem to have seen that on the on film this week, so we're talking a little bit about that. And, you know, a few other odds and ends as we it's weird to say on a Wednesday that we wind down the week, but that's kind of the way it is. But, you know, on the other end, you know, for every short week, there's a long week. So next week we'll be trying to figure out how do we fill some time here as they head down to Miami. So, but I like this. I like this quick turnaround, and what a great game. It really is going to be an intense game because it always is between these these two teams.
Well,
but
you know
this
what?
Is for first place.
Absolutely. And it was kind of fun because the in-stadium poll that they do, you know, that you can do with your phone and text the results and all that kind of stuff during the game, asked who the Patriots' chief rival was. And 59% of the respondents last Sunday said the Jets. So this is a rivalry game. It's a family feud game. It's an AFC East game. It's the JETS, 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 Jets. I mean, this is the game that anybody and everybody who's a Patriots fan can sink their teeth into.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they'd like to have the Jets to sink their teeth into as well. So and that's what makes it good and fun.
And you know what? I cannot tell you how enjoyable I love this storyline of Ty Law. I think this is tremendous. I think that was a little tweak. Of course it was. I don't think he can play. If he could play, he'd be somewhere by now.
Hey, if he could play, he'd be a Patriot.
Exactly. He hasn't played football in 11 months. You cannot tell me that the Jets scouting department, general manager, coach woke up on Monday and said, you know what? I'm not really thrilled with the way our cornerbacks play. What? Ty Law's available? Bring him in. I don't see it being a realistic scenario that all of a sudden, on a short week, they're bringing in Ty Law because he's going
to
be the difference maker.
They're hoping to catch a little of that lawyer Malloy, you know, even though we didn't just cut Ty Law, but they're hoping to catch a little of that magic in a bag.
Well, but you know what? I mean, when the Patriots cut lawyer Malloy and the Bills signed him, at least he was right in the thick of training camp and the season starting up. He's, you know he's in shape. You know he's in football shape. I don't think we know what we're going to get out of Ty Law. I'll be fascinated to see if he plays at all. And both he and Eric Mangini said, you know, it's likely that he will. If he plays, do the Patriots go after him? How does he look? I think it's going to be fascinating. A game that already is loaded with storylines. This is just a great one. He's going to be wearing number 22, so look out for green number 22 tomorrow night.
All right, speaking of Eric Mangini, we're going to leave you today with his conference call with members of the Patriots media. And so the former Patriots defensive whiz, Bill Belichick protege, now the head coach of the Jets, Eric Mangini, will wrap it up today, and then we'll be back same Pat's time, same Pat's channel next week, kids.
This is Eric.
Hey, Eric.
How are we doing?
Good.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Eric, I guess we'll start by asking you how you think the two teams have changed since week two.
I think the one thing that stayed consistent with both teams is you see the same game plan, specific approach, game in and game out. So the things that New England's shown against other teams aren't necessarily going to be what we get. It's going to be what gives them the best chance to win on that Sunday, and we try to take the same approach here. I think that we've made some progress in some areas, both offensively and defensively, and I think New England's done the same thing. I really like the way that Matt's playing right now, and you can see how comfortable he is in that role. But one thing that hasn't changed is the explosive playmakers they have, all their skill guys being able to generate things offensively, defensively, how stout their front seven is and disciplined they are, and then really, really good special teams. It's a challenge, just like it was a challenge that week.
How much more comfortable is Brett in your system now than he was in week two?
I think each week that he's able to work with receivers and work in the offense, he gets a little bit more comfortable, but it'll continue to be a work in progress, and the more reps that we all play together, I think the more progress we'll make.
Eric, you've been able to force a lot of fumbles on sacks. You have a lot of sacks in general. Is that just a byproduct of getting a lot of sacks, or are you doing anything or coaching your guys in any certain way when it comes to that?
We do a lot of work in that area, and that's something that I learned when I was first with the Jets. We had spent a lot of time on what's called ball disruption. I know Pepper does it up there. We focus on individual players, and you look at different areas that you can exploit, maybe the way they hold the ball. It may be, if it's a quarterback, where he holds the ball, scramble patterns, things like that, and just giving the guys the awareness of if you do get an opportunity to get a sack or if you're the second guy in a pile, where you should pressure the ball, what would be the most vulnerable point.
I'm guessing you've been pretty satisfied with how they've carried that out this season.
I was really happy last game because of the types of fumbles that we were able to generate, where guys went in and really rip the ball out, as opposed to it. Sometimes those fumbles are a function of how you hit the player, as opposed to a conscious effort of finding the ball and getting it out. And I like the two examples that we had of finding it and getting it out.
Eric, it's Mike Reese of the Boston Globe. How are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Mike?
Doing well, Eric. Just curious where things stand with Ty Law, or if that's official at this point, and sort of what you're hoping he brings to your team.
Well, with my experience with Ty, spending 5 years with him, coaching him every day, the one thing that I liked about making this move is the versatility that he gives us. He's played inside at the star position some. He's played outside both left and right. He's worked a little bit at safety. He's got a lot of experience, obviously, playing, but he's also has a lot of experience playing in this system. And I think what he does for us is add some versatility as to where we can place some of the other players, and he gives us some good depth there as well.
Just to follow up, he had mentioned to Adam Schefter of NFL Network that he expects to actually play in this game. Is that realistic?
I think we'll have to see how it goes, but I'd say there's definitely a shot.
Hey, Eric, I mean, all the things you mentioned about Ty, you would have known in August or July or September, so why now with the move?
Well, this is really the first opportunity that we had to get something done. I had talked to Ty different times during the course of the season, but this is the first time really had the chance to do something, so we did.
Did you sense, Eric, as that process was coming to a close on Monday, that it was the Jets and the Patriots coming down to the wire to procure Ty's services?
I'm not really sure what their interest was, or if there was any interest. I was really approaching it from our perspective.
Can you talk a little bit about, as the first team to face Matt Cassel twice, what are some of the differences that you've seen now facing him than the first time you played?
I thought Matt did a really good job the first time we played him. I think he's done a really good job in all the games that he's played. He went from really inactivity to transitioning to the biggest role he could possibly have. And as he's gained reps and gained game experience, I think his comfort level, his efficiency in running the offense have all improved.
How much do you feel, Eric, your defense has grown since that second game and improved?
There's been a lot of things I've really liked about what we've been able to do defensively, and I'm really pleased with the overall execution of the different game plan defenses that we've had in place. Now, there's still a lot of things we need to improve, but that's a constant point of emphasis for us. And the amount of sacks that we've been able to generate, that's just not a function of the defensive line. That's the coverage improving and the coordination of the blitzes when they do come, or the three-man, four-man rushes. Whatever the case may be, and then also the ability to turn the ball over, which is crucial because the turnover ratio usually is the biggest stat in football.
What has Chris Jenkins meant for you and that defense?
Chris has done an excellent job. He's a big man, he's physical, but what's been outstanding is his commitment to playing the technique and never having any exposure to a 34 defense, whether it be in college or pro football. Sometimes that transition takes a little bit more time, but he's worked at it. He's really tried to understand how the blocking schemes are going to work, and I think he's done a good job with that. And he also has very good finish for a guy his size. And that's one of the things that stood out when I watched him on the tape when we were initially looking at him.
Eric, have you noticed anything from the Patriots' defense in terms of them doing more maybe this year with different packages on a week-to-week basis, or has that sort of been the norm for them in the time you've sort of game-planned against them?
It's been the norm for all the years that I worked with Bill, whether it be here at the Jets for 3 years or in New England for the 6 years. It's game plan specific, and it's identifying strengths and taking those away. It's identifying weaknesses and exploiting them, and it's also playing to your team's strength. So it's going to be sound. There's going to be very specific rules as to how to adjust it, and they're not going to make very many mistakes.